The people in your life and the relationships you have with them are incredibly important. Through making powerful connections, you can create opportunities and fresh potential for success that you might never create alone. Today on the Origineurs podcast, we're joined by leadership coach and founder of Centano, Dave Morris, who'll share expert insights into how to unlock the power of people and the surprising places that stars emerge. Origineurs tap into the power of their originality to make amazing things happen, whether they have a personal ambition or are on a mission to make the world brighter. Origineurs have dreams, passions, and ideas, but most importantly, they take action. On this podcast, Origineurs from around the world talk to me, Loretta Milan, about the incredible impact they've made, their successes, how they've overcome challenges, and the most important lessons they've learned along the way. Want to fire you up to make the most of your originality too. When you are an Origineur, you make the future. What makes a star? If you watch the films, read the books about renowned entrepreneurs, sports people, or public figures, you may be led to believe they're one of a kind, that they're self-made. Whereas it's true that these superstars are likely driven by a magic formula of talent, motivation, and ingenuity, it's impossible to make it alone. The reality is, even the greatest of us need people, many people, to succeed. For leadership coach Dave Morris, the superstar in his life was not a distant public figure, but closer to home. His granddad Ronald was his guide, mentor and coach through some tough periods. Ronald's legacy instilled in Dave a passion to help people become more self-aware, to overcome obstacles, acquire knowledge and skills, and achieve goals, be happy, confident, and fulfilled. Dave's focus is on what he can do to help leaders unleash their impact to unlock others' potential, whether working for brands like Russell & Bromley, Owen Mumford, the UKRI, and Brunel University London, or whether it's SMEs or transforming his local tennis club. The stories and insights he'll be sharing with us will inspire you to be more connected and bring the best out of people around you if you want the best out of life. And rather than look to celebrity entrepreneurs or public figures for inspiration, Dave will inspire you to invest your time in the people who will actually make time for you too. Because the real stars of this world could be closer to you than you realise. Dave, it's great to welcome you to the Origineurs podcast.
Thank you, Loretta. I'm very grateful to be considered an Origineur, actually.
Well, we're all fabulously original. Dave, it's great to have you here. Now, I'm going to open by asking you about your granddad, Ronald. What is it about him that made him such an inspirational figure in your life?
So I think to answer that question, I just need to give you a bit of context about his life. So if you can imagine, Ronald was born, or Ron, as he was better known, was born in 1916. So if you imagine Great Britain in 1916, there was no NHS, there was no social security system. So he was born into a poverty, basically abject poverty, with a single mum and a brother. And it was a struggle. His life was a struggle. And his dad, I think, was in the Navy and pretty much never around. So he had to grow up in quite a scary world, quite a world where he did go to school. His mum did her best for him, but she had to go and earn money because there was no other way of them surviving. And I think that created some anxieties that he had to sort of manage as life went on. But what he eventually did, he got himself at the age of around 16, I think it was, into Rolls-Royce in Bristol, and started at the shop floor and basically worked his way up. And he spent his whole career in aerospace in Bristol, but went on this journey of, even though he came from that background, he had very little education that stimulated him. He had a mindset that said, this is not my lot. I'm not going to accept this is my lot. I am going to better myself through learning. And he went on a lifelong crusade, if you want to use a word, of improving himself through learning. So to give you an exact couple of examples of what that panned out like, when he was in his late 20s, he earned a bursary to, I think it was Oxford University. And the only reason he didn't go there and study there was because he had two young children at the time. And he felt, I don't want to be away from home. I want to be around my children. But he could have gone to Oxford University. And this is because he'd studied Open University. You know, he'd done his own self-study to get himself to that point where that offer was made. But even later in life, so he lived to 100 years old. Even in his early 90s, I remember my mum saying to me, your granddad's asked for a book for Christmas. I said, what's that on then? She said, quantum physics. But he's 91. Why does he need to know about quantum? I don't know, but he's just interested in it. And that was kind of sums him up. You know, throughout his whole life, he just studied things and learned about things because it sparked his curiosity. It sparked his sense of, oh, I don't understand that. I think I need to. And I think that kind of is the legacy that you were talking about. Now, what he left in me was that don't just accept what you're given. The route to a better life is through learning. Yeah. And, you know, don't always assume what you think you know. And I think that, because I still have a strong sense of curiosity, even now. Yeah, well, sometimes we lose that as, you know, we have that as kids, don't we? That's how we start to learn as kids. We all just ask the why question all the time because we don't really have a frame of reference. But sometimes we lose that as adults. We kind of get to know a load of stuff and then we assume a load of stuff and we tend to be a little bit less curious. Ron never was. My granddad never was. He was always curious.
So what has that curiosity brought to your life?
I think pushing myself. So I think challenging what you think you know, and I've done a lot more of that in recent years probably than I did earlier on, I got to be honest with you. But challenge what you think you know, but you know, and also don't accept that you've reached your potential. You know, there's always a bit more you can do. That breeds confidence, because the more you push yourself, the more you take yourself out of your comfort zone and just try things and seeing what works for you, what doesn't work for you. If it doesn't work for you, it's a learning experience, so it can't go wrong. You might get some experiences you don't particularly want to repeat, but that's actually part of the learning process. But you'll also get some successes, and you'll get some things like, oh, I didn't know I could achieve that. Mm. And actually, you're on to the next level of confidence, the next level of performance, the next level of where you want to be. And I think that's probably, if I look back over my life and my career, that's probably has driven me, without me knowing it, at a young age. I think I really examined what he gave to me in the last 10 years when I set my own business up. And obviously when he passed away a few years ago, you reflect on what he gave you. And I think it became even clearer then what he gave me.
And what are some of the biggest lessons you believe that he taught you?
In my first 10 years of life, I had the unfortunate loss of two fathers. So my biological father got divorced. My mum left when I was 2.5, never saw him again. Mum got remarried, and sadly that father died of a brain tumour when I was about 8 or 9. So if you think, he was the constant sort of male figure in my life when all of that was going on. And of course, it's quite those first 10 years of your life are quite a formative time, aren't they? So you need those kind of figures in your life. And I think, looking back now, I think, what if I hadn't had him there? You know, could my life have gone in a completely different direction? But he was always there just to primarily provide love, provide support, but also to take on some of the roles that a father would naturally take. Mm-hmm. So, give you examples. He loved walking. One of his passions was come home from work and he'd go for walks, nature walks were his thing. And he instilled that in us. So we used to go and stay with him quite often at weekends. He would always take us on nature rambles. And, you know, I now love nature. I love the natural world. I instill that in my kids and they love it as well. And I think that all came from him. He used to just take us. And the walk would be an education because he would talk about things we would see. And he would also play games with us. So he would tell stories. He would play lateral thinking puzzles with us. You know, all sorts of different things that actually are firing up different parts of your brain. So you're able, I think one of the things I'm able to do is shift thinking styles into different styles of thinking. Part of that, I think, is the the stuff that he used to do with when we were younger to get you to think in different ways. So it's not just all like do logical thinking stuff, but let's actually do some relational stuff. Let's do some big picture thinking stuff.
The amazing thing about Ronald, you know, he achieved so much, yet he was there for you. And it sounds that he was a real mentor in your life.
I think that's it. He was that sort of mentor, that kind of guiding star. I think is this phrase you used. He was exactly that. He wasn't overtly in your face. He was just there, you know, guiding you along, picking you up when you fall, sparking your curiosity, all of those things that you'd want somebody in that position to do. And don't we all need that? I mean, you know, we all fall sometimes. We all have times when we need someone else to pick us up or at least help us, you know, back up. And that's exactly what he did.
You've sometimes done this in your life. You brought this sense of nurturing, coaching and mentoring to your local tennis club recently, haven't you?
Yeah, so about 10 years ago, I'd only recently taken up tennis. I was late to that sport. I had been a footballer before that. So I took up sport in my mid-40s, tennis in my mid-40s. And the club I joined, about 3 years later, the men's teams had hit rock bottom. There was a load of things going on where we couldn't get enough players. There wasn't a cohesive environment. We pulled ourselves out of a league midway through the season, which had caused ructions. And I was sort of asked if I would take on captain in the men's teams and try and sort it out. And I thought, well, this is an opportunity to test whether, if you're a leadership coach, perhaps you should test whether you can actually do it in the real world. If I looked at why we'd hit rock bottom, I didn't feel that how the teams were set up were serving the needs of the many. It was serving the needs of the few. And I fundamentally believe that as human beings and as leaders, we should serve the needs of most people, not just a select few. Where's the pathway for progress? I couldn't see a pathway for progress. And I was on that pathway. You know, I was a relatively inexperienced player who was trying to get better. But where's that pathway? How am I going to get better? Yeah, because I had a desire to get better. I just didn't know how I was going to do it. And the third thing is I just looked at it and thought there's way more potential here in this club. For example, at that time, the only people playing men's tennis were middle-aged white men. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. We've got loads of juniors that come through this club. Where's the talented juniors? Why aren't they being brought into the men's teams? And if they're 12, 13, they're probably good enough technically to do that. But what they might need is to come in and learn what teamwork's all about, learn what mental resilience is all about when you're in the moment. Well, they can get that from us because that's the stuff that maybe the older people are actually quite good at. So I wanted to create this pathway. I wanted to create a team environment that served the many, not the few. And that was kind of the test that I put myself through. And to start off, you have to have a vision of what does that look like when you get there. So that's the problem. That's where we were. But where do you want to be? And what does that look like? So for me, it was about inclusivity. Do we have a team environment which is inclusive? Do we have a team environment where it's educational, so people are learning the knowledge, the skills, the habits, the behaviors they need to perform to their best, whatever that is for every individual. So my best will probably be not as good as someone else's best technically because I started late, but actually I can still achieve what is my personal best, if that makes sense. So that was kind of that was winter 2012. It was a bit rocky for the first couple of years. And I think I realized at that point that the key to getting it right was about relationships. Because if you think, a tennis club can be quite political environments, different people with different agendas, naturally. So I just thought, actually, the way to sort this out is to build relationships with all the various stakeholders in the club and see if they support me. Because if they don't support me in doing it, there's no point in doing it. So I reached out to some of the senior members of the club saying, I think we should do that. It takes in a different direction. What do you think? They agree with me. So that's great. I've got them on board. Here's the vision for what it could look like. I needed to get closer relationships with the coaches because actually the coaches are going to be the ones that help develop you. I actually gave some pro bono coaching to the head coach there because he wanted some help as well. So I'd done that as well. You need some other good leaders. It's not just about one person. So it was never going to be about me. It's about, can we put a team of captains together that can take this forward? And trying to find people who are going to be your you know, your captains, your leaders, in other words, that can take it forward. Because not everyone wants to do that role or is equipped to do that role.
So you were spotting both people's potential and what they wanted, but also the collective potential for the club too.
Yeah, and that's probably more important to me. I want to see all the individuals thrive and perform to their best. But for me, it was much more about the collective potential. Can we take this up a few notches where the club actually benefits? Yeah. So the decisions I was making were not what's right for me or for other people, you know, that I knew in the club that were my friends or even some of them were family. This is about what is the right thing for the club, so the club can thrive going forward.
Yeah.
And that's always been my a sort of guiding star with this, is what's the right decision for the club, not for me or for other people.
And tell us about the results that you've achieved by doing all of this.
Yeah, so one of the visions I had was, could we ever be in a position where we could actually get to the top of a league, the top division in the leagues that we play in, and actually win the top division, like, effectively be the Premier League champions of the tennis world? And I felt, you know, we were a long, long way from that at the time. But gradually, with putting the right people in place, we instigated some really good team training every week, we started to get promotions. So we play in summer leagues and winter leagues, two leagues in the summer, two leagues in the winter. So there's a lot of opportunity for, you know, success. And I think I counted it last night, over the last 12 years, we've had, across the two seasons and the four leagues, something like 31 promotions in 12 years. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. And okay, there's been the odd relegation as well, because, you know, it's not all straight line success, is it? You have to take the lessons from when you don't perform. But yeah, 31 promotions, culminating this summer in, for the first time ever, winning the Premier Division in the summer league that we play in, and not just winning the division or the league, but our B team were also in that same division and finished third. So it was unprecedented. And if you'd asked me 12 years ago, is that possible? I'd said probably not. That's a tall ask. Well, we've done it. And it's been a collective achievement. That's the key. It's not down to one person. Mm. It never will be down to one person.
When I first met you, one of the things you said is that you're very results driven, but you believe you get results by working three people. And I think this is really testament to that.
I think that comes from Ron, though. Again, I think my granddad, he instilled in me that, you know, actually relationships in life are the key ways that you find your way forward. So I don't know whether that was something that's in my DNA from birth or whether it was nurture rather than nature, but I think I've always been somebody who wanted to, you know, collaborate and build partnerships and, you know, build relationships with other people. I'm not results driven at any cost. It's about, if we get results, it has to be take people with you. But I am results driven. I'm outcome driven. I am quite goal driven, but not at the expense of people. And I think that's the key part.
Do you think there's a degree that your granddad, Ronald, he's given you a gift in the time that he's spent with you, the curiosity he's given you, the mentorship he's given you? You're passing that on to some young people now that you've invested in. They'll very much, I'm sure, have been inspired by that, and that they may want to pass it on to others too, and that gift will pass on.
But isn't that the essence of being human?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I see it now that he gave me a gift, and a gift that I'm fretful forever be grateful for him for doing so. It's interesting, if you talk to my mum, because he was a very good father to my mum and my uncle. And my mum said he was an amazing man. She thought, I could not have asked for a nicer father. And even now, I think it's about 8 years since he passed away, she says, I miss him every day. He was just this inspirational figure in her life, that, and just somebody she could go to if she felt she needed a bit of direction or a bit of wisdom or something. That was the gift of him. And I think you cannot underestimate how important that is. Because a question I often ask people when they come on our leadership programs is, what impact and contribution are you trying to make in your role as a leader?
Yeah.
And it's a question people often look at me, think, I don't know, how do I answer that? But, you know, if we're in leadership roles, we're there to add value in some way, aren't we? If we're not adding value, why are we there? So for me, that adding value comes with, okay, well, what can I give to these people that will allow them to add value? Yeah. And that might be a piece of feedback. It might be a bit of coaching. It might, whatever it might be, it might be a point them in the right direction for a bit of knowledge they need to go and acquire. Whatever that is. Yes. I think you're right. That is the essence of being human, surely.
I totally agree. You touched on there about how you are doing that in business. I'm so curious to explore your mission in business to get leaders more connected through your connected leadership model.
Yeah, so when Rich is my business partner, when we sort of merged our businesses in 2016 and thought, okay, well, what's the purpose behind us doing this? You know, where are we going with this? I think what we felt was that there wasn't really a framework that pulled together what does a modern leader look like. So there's lots of really good thought leadership out there, management theory out there, and there's lots of really good stuff, very well thought through, very robust, and some of the stuff that we still access and use now. But what we were looking for is if someone came to us and said, okay, in the world we're in now, yeah, what does a modern leader look like? Where's the framework that we could, you know, explain to them? And we couldn't find one, so we built our own. Yeah. And the essence of that is about emotional intelligence. So I think good leaders are emotionally intelligent, but also we are in a world where there's interdependency and interconnectedness. So it's we can't think of our businesses as like a machine. You press a button here and something predictable comes out the other end. That's not how life is. Businesses should be thought of as ecosystems. So this concept of systems thinking, where whatever you do has a ripple, and sometimes those ripples are a ripple you don't expect. So you have to think of the world of work as an ecosystem where your behavior has ripples. Now, you can have positive ripples or you can have negative ripples. How do we build a framework where people can have consistently positive ripples into that ecosystem? Because that's what leaders are there for. They're there to positively ripple, not negatively ripple. And that takes a lot of knowledge, skill, habits, behaviors to do that. So we built a framework based on the concept of systems thinking, which is all about this thinking of your world as an ecosystem, but also what are the cardinal points in that ecosystem. So we have, if you like, it's a set of concentric rings that represent your world overlaid with a compass of how to navigate it. That's kind of how I would describe the model.
That sounds like it will make a positive impact. I understand there are kind of four pillars that underpin this.
Yeah, so that, if you like, that sort of compass that I was talking about, the four pillars of that would be purpose and direction. So as a leader, you have power, and your power is to take and manage that power sensibly. So you set direction. You set a vision for the organization that you're representing. So think back to my tennis example. Where did I start? What's the vision for this? Where are we going with this? And do people buy into it? Because if they don't buy into it, I'm not going to get very far. So you need to have that. But if you imagine, so that's like the North Star. People always talk about your purpose is your North Star. Yeah. But if you go down to the other end, how are you going to make that happen? You have to empower people and build capability to make that happen. Yeah, you can't do it all on your own. So that's where you give power away to other people and allow them to be the best they can be. Yeah. So you realize your vision through empowering other people. In other words, sometimes it's right to hold power and use it. I'm not saying that's never the right thing to do, but if you become too autocratic with that, if you become too micromanagey with that, where you just hold power all the time and don't give it away, that's generally not going to serve you very well at all. And people, I've never met many people who say to me, Dave, I love being micromanaged. I love being directed all the time. It just doesn't happen. In fact, it's the opposite.
I've not met anybody who loves being micromanaged, for sure. Especially my kids. Kids hate being micromanaged.
Especially your kids, yeah. I think that's one of the things I realized about myself also very early on, is that, you know, freedom from control for me is really important. Sometimes, you know, we all need boundaries, we all need parameters, we all need direction, but actually once I've got that, let me get on with it, let me try and deliver, and if I want more help, I'll come back and ask you. So that's the sort of north-south axis on the compass. The east-west axis on our leadership compass is, on the one hand, yes, you need to deliver performance. You know, businesses are there to deliver outcomes, whether that be profit, you know, getting your services, your products to the right people, all of that stuff, it's really important. But how do you do that? On the other hand, it's about relationships. You can only do it through the power of people. So do you go and build the relationships with others that allow you to get the performance? If that makes sense, yeah. And that's that again, that was at the tennis club. That's what I thought. I'm not going to get the performance I want out of this or the club needs out of this if we don't get people on board. And who are the key people? So even going back to it, if you think about it, I didn't know who the talented juniors were, but the coaches would be able to tell me that. But then you've got to get the parents of the coaches on board, parents of the kids on board, because they want their kids to be looked after. If the kids are going into men's teams, what does that mean? So you have to build a relationship with the parents, because you're looking after their kids basically when they're on court with you. So that's what I mean. You have to build relationships in order to navigate the ecosystem to get the outcomes that you want.
What are some of the transformations that you've seen in a business environment when people have enacted a connected leadership model?
I think it starts with leading yourself. So a lot of it is about self-awareness and self-management. If you think about what makes a leader, starting, if you can't lead yourself, how you can lead other people. So we always start talking to people about self-awareness, self-management. So I've seen some quite transformational changes there, where people have just actually realized that they've got some habits they need to change, or they've got some level of awareness that they need to change. And that can be quite transformational in terms of, there was one lady who went on our 12-month program who wrote a lovely email at the end of it saying, you've given me some practical tools that I've implemented to make my working life better, but actually the biggest power of it is you've transformed my home life, because what I've learned about how to be more emotionally intelligent is improve relationships with my kids, my husband, and you know, and even some other people as well. You know, that's why I get out of bed in the morning, to get feedback like that. That is going back to where we started this, how you make other people's lives better.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, so we'll end on one thing, and that's, what would you encourage people to do who are listening today to make the most of what they've learned today?
So going back to Ron, my granddad, I think that if there's one thing that he taught me, is curiosity. Challenge what you think you know. You know, also we're all born curious. That's how we start to learn as kids. I think I've remained quite curious all the way through my life, and I think that was instilled by him. But I mean, I'll give you a new example. I had some health challenges in the last couple of years where I thought, oh, I want to be healthier. I want to be around a long time for my kids. What is it about looking after me that I think I know, but I'm where I'm wrong? And I start doing a load of research on, you know, well-being. And you learn some things, you think, oh, that's not what I thought I knew. Yeah, and actually some things actually are really, really helpful. So I've changed some things quite fundamentally in my life because I've been curious and because I've thought, I'm just going to challenge my thought process on that. Mm-hmm. And then you find out actually your perspective it widens, it deepens. So never assume. Keep challenging what you think you know. Try and get a wider perspective, a deeper perspective.
That's an amazing piece of advice to leave us on today. So go out in the world and be curious. It's amazing what you could learn out there. And Dave, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
So, what are the most important takeaways from this episode of the Originers podcast? Just as Ronald shaped Dave's life and he's gone on to make an impact on others, who are the people around you who have had a positive impact on your life? Who are the stars around you who inspire you to succeed, who care about you succeeding, and will share their wisdom with you? Treasure those people. They are the ones who matter most. If you don't have anyone in your life like that, look for them. They are the people all around who are creating positive ripples around them. 2, have a vision of what success looks like. Where do you want to be and what does it look like? Don't compare your ideas of what your best could be with someone else. Consider your unique strengths, attributes and experience. You are an original after all. Don't be afraid to dream big, even if it seems far away right now. You can put steps in place that you need over the time frame that works best for you, and you can inspire people to get on board. 3. You want to be someone who creates positive ripples in the world and adds value to the people around you too. To do this, you need 4 important things: purpose, direction, performance, and strong relationships. What can you do to make sure you are nurturing all four of these things in your life? And remember, always be curious. Curiosity leads you to new experiences, new lessons, new people, and new stars. It's all out there, waiting to be discovered. Now is the greatest time to tap into the power of your originality to make amazing things happen. The Originers podcast features expert tips and ideas to help you make the most of your originality. You will also enjoy regular inspiration from Originers around the world. They'll open up about how they've achieved great things, got through the challenges, and the most important lessons they've learned. Subscribe now, because Originer, this is your time. You make the future.